In the name of the most holy, most loving God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer. Ago, I was standing on the shore of the sea or Lake of Galilee, albeit on the opposite shore from that mentioned in today's gospel. The Sea of Galilee is actually a lake, not a big one at that, 7 miles wide and 14 miles long. That was one of my many learnings from my pilgrimage, my first trip to the Holy Land. I waited in the lake along with numerous other pilgrims. I did not walk on the water. Maybe I'll learn that the next time. Our gospel today follows immediately in Luke, the story of his calming the storm, of Jesus' calming the storm on the same lake. This story that we hear today is significant because it also appears in Matthew and Mark's gospel. To the gospel writers, this is an important account. It describes something that actually happened. When Jesus calmed the storm, his disciples, terrified in their swamp boat, had shouted, "Master, Master, we're dying, we're perishing." And then, in a word, Jesus calms the storm, it's a miracle, and the waves are quieted. The disciples are astonished, and no doubt, offer words of thanksgiving as they land the boat on the far side of the Lake of Galilee. As they're getting out of their boat, suddenly they see a new threat. Stumbling toward Jesus is a naked stranger with wild, desperate eyes. The windstorm on the lake has quieted, but now they face an even more terrifying spiritual storm. A man possessed by demons. Although today's story seems fairly direct at first, simply another old account of a miraculous healing, as if we could ever describe such an event as simple, we learn immediately that there's more to the story than just the healing. It involves the story of a tormented Gentile who hangs out in and near a herd of pigs. Immediately, we sit up and take notice because this is not an ordinary Jewish tale. The Gerasene man in Jesus' story wore no clothes and lived among the tombs instead of in a house. He was considered ritually unclean and shunned by the community. He lived in isolation, in loneliness, not unlike some other persons with mental illness. Gentiles, the dead, and swine are remarkably and famously unclean for devout Jews. Naming the disturbed man Legion, often we think that's just because there were so many demons in him, was in fact to employ another connotation of the word. Rome's notorious army was often called Legion. And so with just this little bit of historical perspective, we can see that this story is beyond what might appear an account of individual salvation and actually bears overtones of revolution and liberation. The Romans were oppressive. Jesus healed the inner chaos and brokenness of a man crazed by the effects of violent Roman occupation on him. The gospel writers tell this story to show that the despised Romans would not in the end rule the day. And even more astonishingly, that this good news was not just for Jews, but Gentiles as well. Okay, so what is this story specific to that time and place have to say to us? Or why do we even care about it in our own context? Certainly, as 21st century people, our view of God's people is much wider than that of the time of Jesus and his contemporaries. maybe not as wide as we would like it to be, but certainly we understand the wideness and inclusiveness of God's love, and rarely think about those who are in and those who are out, right? And our understanding of mental illness is much broader than that of the first century. We rarely speak of demons in any serious sense. We speak of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and other mental illnesses, which we almost fully understand and almost always successfully treat with drugs, except when we don't, or when the poor person can't afford them. There's certainly no stigma about mental illness in our culture, right? And we 21st century are really in need of liberation, living freely as we do, unencumbered by systems or sources that govern our lives or hold us hostage to shackles we'd like to break. That occasional sense, well, maybe a little bit more often than occasional, of being on a merry-go-round from which there seems to be no easy exit, but we only feel it because we're tired in the moment, right? Maybe on second thought, this story is not as distant as it seems. In fact, it could be my story, and my guess is maybe it could be yours. I don't admit to having very many demons, but the refusal to admit to them doesn't mean they don't exist. I have felt, on occasion, the desperation of this man, so vividly described in Luke's passage. For many times it seized him, and he was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, and he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. I have known the demons of worry and anxiety, of depression and fear, of insecurity and inadequacy, and have, in fact, been seized by them on occasion when no amount of straight talking or prayer seems to quell the pain. Maybe you've known these demons in your own lives. I think they belong to the human condition. And while this story is about the healing of one person's illness or demons, there are communal and systemic demons which are part of our culture and our reality. My experience as the child of a survivor of the Armenian Genocide informed all of my encounters on this trip. And the lens through which I looked, and always look, particularly at those who are marginalized or repressed. On this pilgrimage, I saw firsthand the demons of colonialism and occupation. The Episcopal Church's presence in the Holy Land is a result of 19th century English colonialism. At the same time, the Episcopal Diocese of Jerusalem does heroic and amazing and wonderful things, including owning and operating 16 schools, two major hospitals, plus a number of clinics and residential and outpatient institutions for people with disabilities. I also felt the demons of exile and refugee status. When one country occupies another, unfair treatment abounds, including no mail delivery or garbage pickup in East Jerusalem. And then, as I was thinking about treatment of Native Americans, jumped out at me when I realized American colonialism is part of our own ugly history. And our treatment of migrants and refugees today, as we separate families and banish people to concentration camps. And of course, we, all of us, suffer the demons of racism and inequality in our country, from housing to schools to policing to incarceration. Demons are definitely systemic as well as personal. And these shared demons need Jesus' healing touch as well. After Jesus healed the man, he set sail back across the sea again, which may mean that the whole trek across a stormy sea was all in order to meet this unclean man, possessed by an unclean spirit, living in an unclean and forsaken environment. Which suggests to me that God will go anywhere to reach and free and sustain and heal those who are broken and despairing. There is no place on earth that is God forsaken. More importantly, there is no person that is God's forsaken, or unclean, or outcast, or abandoned, or unpopular, or incarcerated, or an unbeliever. No one is left out of God's love. Consider this. There is no indication that this Gentile man became Jewish, or for that matter, became Christian. He wanted to follow Jesus, but Jesus sends him back home with the instructions, "Go and tell what God has done for you." Jesus sends the man back to his own people, the very people who had ostracized him, to be a living witness to gospel power. In doing so, the healed man becomes the first evangelist to the Gentiles. Jesus comes to challenge and cast out every power that prevents us from living fully and freely as human beings created in God's image. Those whom Jesus has healed and freed know that his liberating love is indeed good news. The gospel that he commands us to proclaim throughout our cities and communities. God is still at work in Jesus, through you and me, bringing God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven.